So I'm wearing these new no-see socks, and they feel very feminine. Look.
They're teeny tiny.
They're teeny tiny. I feel like you wear them under pumps. I feel like I should be wearing 6-inch stilettos or something.
Like heads.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that?
Because I have these new shoes that are really low-rise. I threw them out there so you wouldn't have to see them in the studio.
Okay.
I'm trying to make this as clean as possible for you when you arrive.
How are they feeling? Good?
They feel fine. Yeah, but they're weird to look at. My feet are big and gangly, so like they slip off. You know what I mean?
Is this going
to
be the cold open? Is this our announcement to the
world? I think that's where we are. Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, here we are.
Hi, Jillian Bezzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Jillian, tell them the things that we have to tell them about.
I will do that. Post-haste. I will do that promptly. Oh, we have a Facebook page. Facebook group with like 60,000 people in it.
What?
That's really fun. And we also have a Patreon where we have a whole like shit ton of stuff.
Yeah, join the Facebook group. It's the True Crime Obsessed podcast discussion group. The Patreon is amazing, but only if you like amazing bonus content and drag bingo.
Yeah, so it's ad-free versions of these regular episodes. And then the series, like we did Amy Brad. We're doing the Tylenol murders, like all the things that have like several episodes, Mr. and Mrs. Murder.
Yes.
And then we do like fun stuff, like even at the $5 level, like the lowest level, drag bingo every month.
Yeah.
Where we like send you prizes. If
TCO
you win.
Patreon, where the lowest level is the highest level.
I mean, kind of. We are not gatekeeping.
Except Hero Bells, we see you and we're making another episode just for you tomorrow.
Yeah. And then we do like Unsolved Mysteries or Mob Wives or just like catch ups and AMAs. It's a whole party and everyone's invited.
Yeah. Everyone's invited.
There you go.
What are we talking about today, girl?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So this is a documentary called Blood and Myth. It's on Hulu. It's new. I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Yeah.
The story takes place at the edge of the world, Northern Alaska. Teddy Kyle Smith. To us natives, it didn't make any sense.
The suspect in a shooting of two brothers has been identified as a Kiana actor who went missing earlier this month after the death of his mother.
Mother's dead. Shot two men. No one knows why. I had no idea how deep this story would go. I had no idea how far this would take me.
I didn't want to shoot him. I had to go along with what they wanted me to do.
Who's that?
Wild people out here.
The Indigos?
Yeah.
Inukuns, the mythical beings that we were all told about by elders, it just stopped me in my tracks, gave me the shivers.
Right at the top, I love this guy, our main narrator guy. Like, he's the guy who discovered this story, and his name is James, and he, I don't know, I love the way that he tells the stories. I love how personal this is, and he says at the beginning, this is the story that takes place at the edge of the world, Northern Alaska. This land is an extreme place that's barely America. It just doesn't care if you live or die.
It's called the last frontier, but to us natives, it's not a frontier, it's home. But we've lived on this land for over 10,000 years. So we're still very connected to the land. We're still very connected to our stories.
To keep us from going off, from getting lost.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, I'm here. Let's go. Like, this is so personal to him. So he's telling us the story.
Can we stop for 1 second?
Sure.
Because I wanted to say something to you. I meant to make a note about this.
What?
Fam. I don't think you know how hard Jillian works on our schedule, on our calendar. And I wanted to say something to you about this. Because
why?
She works so hard to balance our storytelling so that we're telling all kinds of stories, especially stories of like minority communities. It is very, very difficult, this task. And you do it so well.
Oh, thank you.
And you always find really interesting stories that really need to be told that I think a lot of other podcasts wouldn't cover. And I think this falls under it. And this is so, not only do you find them, but you find the really good ones. And
thanks.
I just wanted to say thank you as your partner.
Oh God, thank you.
For the hard work. And I wanted you to know that I see it and I am very grateful for
thank
it.
Thank you so much. It is super important to me.
Yes.
So thank you for saying that. And I appreciate it. And it's like never gonna stop. That's always at the forefront of what, like, so when I see this, my job is super weird because a lot of it is like, I have to have every app.
Yes.
I have to have every alert, every reminder, every Google thing. So when this came up, like coming soon, I was like, oh, I'm setting a reminder later. And then when it, I was like, this needs to be bumped. Like we're bumping, you know, some other train wreck app. Like we'll get to the Mayor of Mayhem next week. Like this needs to be told first.
And like, we've covered a lot of documentaries that we've had different opinions on, but some that we've agreed that like are just not good. And it's important to point out that like, this is really good. Yeah. Not only is this a story that needs to be told, it's about preserving culture. It's about understanding story and how you relate to other people's stories and what you can learn from other people, which I'm really trying to zoom in on what we can learn from these documentaries. And anyway, this is just a very well done one.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it, loved it. Because it's like the whole point of this documentary is like, what, how do I say this in a way that makes sense? Because James is going to say it about a million times. He is telling the story of his people and we need more of that. That's
100%. But I got to tell you, Hulu, Netflix, HBO, that starts at the top. That like you all are the people who are funding these projects and making them happen and seeing the importance in them. So you need to do that, too. And we need people from these communities in those positions of power to make these things happen.
And we'll, you'll hear about that a lot.
I'll put our soapboxes away and then we'll get back to the episode.
Yeah, I need help getting down. I know. So James is telling us a story about a man named Teddy Kyle Smith. He shot two people. They survived, but this is the story of how and why he did it, but it's also a story about what James is calling mythical beings.
Yeah, but first we're going to deal with the fact that James is a drummer, and I said, I'm going to let him off the hook. Now, I love drummers. I love a drummer, but he's making a joke as he's breaking out his drum set.
Neighbors love drummers. How stoked would you be if I moved next door?
As a person who has been traumatized by my shitty neighbors playing music so loud you can't even think in your own apartment over the years, I'm saying, James, no.
Yeah.
I know they sell those pads that you can put on your snare drum so the neighbors don't have to hear it.
He goes, how stoked would you be if I moved in next door? And I was like, if you're asking me, pretty stoked, James.
Yeah, I would agree, but this would be the one thing I wouldn't love about him as a neighbor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, drummers, but you got to take care of your neighbors. You know what I mean?
I know as the neighbor, it sucks, perhaps. But like, as someone who is occasionally on like drum talk, I love drummers. I love watching them drum. I love like having a pop song play and then the drummer's like, this is what it could be. I love drummers.
Me too,
so
but
much.
Do you know what I like more? Going to sleep.
I know.
My kid's sleeping through the night. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll go over and talk to James and then you get some sleep. I'll be like, James, put the sticks away for a second and then we'll chat and then.
I want to come over for the cocktails and the hang with James. I'm giving this guy
James
a pass.
Doesn't have cocktails. We're just going to talk and have some tea.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Have tea, spill tea. Let's do it.
I'm down for the tea, James. I love you, but drum quietly.
And but he says, he was like, he loves playing the drums. The whole world goes away. It's a way for him to escape. And James rules.
There is something about drumming that is very physical. You know what I mean?
I think
it is like a workout.
Thing.
Yeah.
I love drummers.
I know. I can see it
I'm
in your
drummer,
eyes,
really.
Girl.
I love drummers.
Travel down the road and back again. Girl, Momentous is a new sponsor. This is the creatine chews, and I'm obsessed with them.
Yeah, so these creatine chews are bite-sized lemon-lime chews that make consistency effortless. You just chew, and then you're on the go.
They are delicious, but let me tell you, because I was learning about creatine, it's not just about building muscle. It's like the added benefit. They say it's great for focus, for recovery, for aging, for cognitive performance.
Yeah, there are no artificial sweeteners, no fillers, just science-backed, clinically proven performance in a portable, craveable format.
Ah, they're so delicious. Unlike generic brands, by the way, Momentous doesn't follow trends. They perfect the fundamentals. This is creatine done right. There's lots of garbage out there on the market. This is not that.
It's true. And creatine is even more essential for women who naturally store about 70 to 80% less creatine than men, which means consistent supplementation can have an even greater impact on energy, recovery, and focus.
Did I mention these chews are delicious?
They're lemon lime. Are you kidding?
Absolutely my favorite.
So good.
Fam, I'm taking it every day. Right now, Momentous is offering our listeners up to 35% off your first order with promo code TCO.
Go to livemomentous.com and use promo code TCO for up to 35% off your first order.
That's livemomentous.com, promo code TCO. Take it along with me, fam. Let me know if you love it as much as I do.
Yeah, not just for your muscles anymore.
No, the cognitive stuff, the anti-aging.
I'm super into it.
So James was born and raised in Kotzebue, Alaska. He says it's the corner of the world, the edge, the north. And he describes the world forever knew his people as the Eskimos.
Yeah. And also the population is 2,979. We're talking about
it's
a very small
very
place.
Small. And we're going to even smaller places than that.
Right. And so that word is not, to quote Walter Sobchak, the preferred nomenclature.
Yeah.
They are Alaskan Inuit.
Yes.
They call themselves Inupiaq. Like this community that James is talking about, of course, there are all factions of Inuit and indigenous people, but James is talking about the Inupiaq people.
But he's also talking about that, like, growing up when he would meet people who weren't from where he was from.
I think the rest of the world views my people as almost mythical creatures. You know, I'd say, where are you from? I say, Alaska. And they'd be like, whoa. And they was like, what? And I say, I'm Inupiaq. And they'd look at you like you're a leprechaun or a unicorn or something. They'd be like, wow, I studied about you in social studies. I learned about your people. Igloos, right?
Even if you're doing that as a way to express interest, it is so othering to people.
I know. And he's like, yeah, people would say like, oh, I studied you in social studies, the igloos, right? And it's woof.
I can understand where people are, in some cases, trying to say I am interested.
For sure.
I've learned, but like, we gotta do better.
Oh my God.
You know?
Like, a million years ago, that probably would have been me, maybe, in a way where it's like, I think your culture is fascinating and really cool and I want to know more about it. But I could totally see
That's how you say it, though.
Oh, okay.
That's how you say it.
I could totally see how that enthusiasm about a culture that is fascinating could totally
like,
be seen
you're so
as a
weird
shitty
and interesting, man.
Oh, yeah, no, we're, you know, not
no.
weird. No, no, no. And also, I just want to say, in my Googling, I've heard some variations on how Inupiaq is pronounced, but for the sake of this coverage, I think the right thing to do is follow James's lead on this.
Yes.
But when I did my, like, YouTube pronunciation, there are little differences, but I'm going to say how James says
it. Yeah, and James, no, I thought this was really interesting. He tells us like sort of the history of his people. He says, my people were the last to have contact with the West. It was like we went through a time machine. He says we were on the twilight of the Stone Age, essentially. Like when Alaska became a state in 1959, there was like major colonization that happened. And, you know, he says like life changed big times. He says this was like the space age. And they were forced to assimilate into American culture in 1959. And like that wasn't that long ago.
No, it really wasn't.
You know?
And so he tells us that his town got a reputation for being what he calls a brawling town. And he's like, you know, a lot of Inupiaq villages are. And he says he saw a lot of disarray and he thought music was going to get him out of there.
I would play anybody who called for a drummer. I'm like a hired gun, soldier of fortune, I like to say. I wasn't living high on the hog, but I didn't want to work in the mine. I didn't want to work on the slope in the oil fields. Could have made a shit ton of money. And I prioritized having fun.
He prioritized having fun.
Because life was hard.
Life, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, he found his fun where he could. And, like, drumming became a religion to him out of necessity. You know, he needed an outlet for all of, like, all of the things that he was feeling growing up.
And he's a creative dude and he's a storyteller. So, like, while he was drumming and being a musician and telling stories and, like, being creative in that way, he also did freelance film production. And he said, I just wanted to be around the action. I took every gig I could get, even if it was, like, super cheesy and offensive and pretty racist against his own people.
And we see some of the commercials he worked on. Like, on one of them, there's literally a Native man being spit roasted laughing.
The Ludens commercial? The cough drops?
Oh, my God.
I was like, wait, one of my favorite candies as a child?
I know,
like,
me too.
The cherry Ludens?
I know. We can't have anything nice.
Etou Ludens?
What the fuck?
I was like, what is this?
But Ludens are delicious.
They're like candy.
But they are candy.
You know what's also candy?
What?
I don't know if this exists anymore. Dimetapp.
Oh, really?
I usually...
The look of shame in your eyes.
No shame at all.
Really?
Like, I remember, I don't know if they probably changed the formula so that it doesn't taste so delicious.
Usually I
don't reach for a grape-flavored thing.
Yeah.
The grape Dimetapp, if you know, my Dimetapp girlies, I'd be like, oh no. So this life being in film production and being a drummer...
I felt kind of lost at that time. Starting to party more, drink more. I felt like a ship without a rudder. I wasn't really sure who I was.
He didn't know who he was. And again, like all of this colonization, he was like, what am I doing? I'm on film sets where they're like making fun of my people. Like, what is going on? So this is when James learns about a guy named Teddy Michael Smith. He's a former Marine who was arrested for and charged with attempted murder. He shot two men. They were brothers, Paul and Charles Buckle. And Teddy's 74-year-old mother died. And then Teddy goes missing. And then he shot these two guys.
Yeah.
And James is going to try to get to the bottom of this because he's like, this case just sounds weird. And as James is like researching this, the minute he sees Teddy's face, he's like, oh my God, that's the guy from On the Ice.
And I just want to say here, as a person who gets obsessed with stories, I totally understood James.
Oh.
He was like, this story came up on his social media feed. it was a fascinating and crazy story about somebody that like is from his community. And then like, and this happens when you're researching stories sometimes, like he realizes this man was an actor in a really big movie that was like maybe poised to like change the way these kinds of stories were being told. And this movie also meant a lot to James. So it's like layers on layers on layers of him becoming fascinated with this guy.
Yeah. So On the Ice is a movie from 2011, and it really meant a lot to James because he's like,
I felt like it was the start of something. I felt like it was the start of us being able to tell our own stories and not have other people tell our stories.
Because it wasn't like the cough drop commercial.
Exactly.
You know, like it really showed who these people are. It was made by the community. It was a turning point.
Yeah. I mean, like, once again, it showed James, like, you could be an actor in a movie and be of the people that the movie is telling it about without being a stereotype.
And James says something that is like, this is what I really love this documentary. Like, James, if you want to sit down for an interview, we'd love to have you. But he says, he was like, when you grow up constantly seeing yourself as a caricature, it messes with your head. Like when you think like, wait, that's not who we are, but that's how the world sees us. Like, is that who we are? It kind of forces you to like gaslight yourself. But he's like, I know that's not who I am. It just does not put you in a good headspace.
I mean, it's not nearly the same kind of marginalization, but that's the gay thing. You know what I mean? Like you very rarely get to see yourself on film. I mean, it happens to this day all the time. I'll be watching a movie that I love with a gay character who's fully formed dies. The gay character is always, always getting murdered. Always. Even now to this day, it's like the only way in mainstream film and television we can have gay characters. It's crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But like there's this guy, Teddy, on the red carpet at Sundance talking about representation and saying everything that James is telling us now, like the importance of this movie, why he did it. And so James is like, oh my God, Teddy, this guy, he did it. He got out. Because for James, he was like, it was all about getting out. And he saw Teddy and he's like, he's living my dream.
Yeah.
He's really doing it. He was about to get his big break with this movie. What the hell happened?
Yeah, it makes like, because remember, James is obsessed with Teddy's story, so it makes this downfall even more of a downfall.
Because like, he sees himself in Teddy and like what his future could have been.
Exactly.
So like, how did this happen?
How did this happen? So James starts to text people who he thinks might know Teddy. And he learns, like, through the responses he's getting, Teddy was not just a great actor. He was, like, a really great person doing great things, like, really walking the walk, giving back to the community.
I learned that he volunteered at the school and taught kids traditional Inupiaq skills. He volunteered at the elders' camp, trapped wolverines in the middle of winter. He loved the Inupiaq way of life.
He loved the Inupiaq way of life. He was just like doing good work in the community.
Yeah, because we learn about this all the time. Like Connie Walker talks about this all the time too. Like just the colonization of it, like the residential schools, like so, like the culture is being ripped away from these people by white people. So Teddy was one of those people who's like making sure the language stays alive. Like there are so many indigenous people who do not speak the language because it just got lost in the colonization and like the shitty white people of it all. And Teddy's like really trying to keep it alive.
And it's just like, then how did it all fall apart?
Right.
And so James learns that when Teddy was arrested, he not only is talking to the troopers about like the shootings that he was arrested for, but he's talking about other things that had happened to him while he was out in the wilderness after he like ran away.
He's very chatty. Like he's got stuff to say and it's not in the way where it's like some asshole running his mouth in the backseat.
No.
Like this guy is trying to talk about experiences that he had.
And they're wild. And so James does a records request for this guy. He gets the trooper interviews, the courtroom audio. And the very first thing Teddy started talking about was what he saw out there in the mountains. And they say he drops a bombshell. And so we hear some of Teddy's audio. And he says,
I mean, I actually saw them.
The Indians?
Yep. I used to hear them. They used to throw pebbles in my cabin. Or whistle. And I finally got to see them.
The trooper's like, do you mean the Inukins? Like the trooper knows. And Teddy goes, yeah. And he says, I used to hear them and they threw pebbles at my cabin or they'd whistle and I finally got to see them. And he describes them with, you know, a big head and broad shoulders. And James, when James hears this, He goes, everything stopped. His mouth went dry. He started tasting pennies. And I'm like, my experience, that penny thing is pure adrenaline. That is fight or flight. That is like, that is a really, if you've ever had that experience of everything stopping and your mouth goes dry and you have a mouthful of pennies, something's like brewing.
Yeah.
It's something to not ignore.
And listeners, if you're lost, like, what are the Inukans? We're going to get there. This is like the part of the big myth and the legend of like this area of Alaska. So stay with us. We'll get there in a second. Girl, Micro Perfumes is a brand new sponsor. This is such a cool idea. Fam, have you ever dropped like $150 on a bottle of cologne or perfume only to realize that you absolutely hate it? Has that ever happened to you?
It is the worst.
Yeah.
Then you're stuck with it because it's so expensive and then you feel like I should probably be using it, but then you hate it.
Yeah. With Micro Perfumes, for just a few bucks, you can test drive the real deal. We're talking Dior, Tom Ford, Creed, authentic designer scents without the full bottle gamble. Full bottle gamble, well said.
Right.
You
so
know?
Here's how it works. So Micro Perfumes lets you sample luxury fragrances in pocket-sized vials. And you also, because I was on the website and I, of course, placed my order.
Yeah.
But you can also get like a travel size. Like, it's not just the sample size. Like, you have options of what size sample you'd like.
Yeah.
And the prices are incredible.
Well, they're dealing with real designers. Just a couple bucks per bottle. No dupes, no knockoffs. And this is my favorite part. Fast shipping straight to your door. Like, when you order something like this, you want it yesterday.
And especially if you're like, oh, I have this event, I want to try this thing. Or if, like, you know there's a fragrance you really like, you
Just,
like, type in Tom Ford and see what they have.
And, like, they've got over 500 fragrances. You know there's going to be something in there that you absolutely have to have.
Yeah, and you get instant access to authentic in-stock fragrances. It's the real deal.
So, fam, why commit blind to a $200 bottle?
Find your scent soulmate today and get up to 60% off at microperfumes.com/TCO.
That's microperfumes.com/TCO for up to 60% off.
Microperfumes, real scents, no regrets.
No regrets, girl.
James shows us a book, and it
yes.
was his great-grandfather's. And the title of the book, because this book was originally published in 1975.
And not written by his grandfather, by the way. It was written by anthropologists who were taking the stories of the grandfather.
Right. So this was published in 1975, which is why James says the title of it, but it's called The Eskimo Storyteller. It's a very, very famous book.
Yeah.
So it's a collection of 188 folktales collected in 1965. And James's great-grandfather was one of the last great Inupiaq storytellers.
What James tells us, and I didn't really catch this until the second time I watched it. The storyteller is not just a nice thing to call the old man with stories. This was like an exalted position within the community. The storyteller of the community, would they say, was much like the chief or a shaman, like a very well-respected position.
Yeah, and like, again, it's about keeping this alive because constantly, everywhere they turn around, they're like being made fun of on a cough drop commercial
yes.
or like their culture is being ripped from them. So that's why these storytellers are so important and they're held in such high regard because this can get lost so easily.
Of course.
So this book contains his great-grandfather's words as recorded by the anthropologist. And the very first story is about Inukins.
And it's about his grandfather encountering the Inukins. And the story details his experience walking along the high ground of the creek. He comes to a point where he saw two men around the next turn. And he said,
suddenly he pretended to discover them and started to walk towards the rock. The two dwarfs stood up and started talking to him. The little men are called Inukhtigorot, Inukuns.
What he describes is that, like, a long time ago, everyone lived side by side, but then blood was spilled and the Inukins left. And then ever since then, it's always like kind of like whispers in the wind about them. And they live nomadically and they live in places humans don't go.
Yeah.
They don't want to be seen. They don't want to be part of the community that James is in. They're very short. They're very strong. They speak an old form of Inupiaq. They have their own language as well. They whistle. So there's a lot of folklore and stories. I mean, like, I don't even know if I want to say folklore because there are people who to this day believe like this is 100% true,
well,
which I guess folklore can be.
Yeah, like to the point that the people within the community do not even speak about them. Like they're taught not to talk about them. If you see them, you don't talk to them. You don't look at them. Like you respectfully leave them alone and leave them out of your mouth.
And some people say that they're supernatural beings. Some people say that they have shamanic powers or like people are saying like I've witnessed their superhuman strength. Like, I've seen it. I've seen things that I can't explain, or I've come across things in the woods that cannot be explained.
And they tell us that the anthropologists who are taking the story in his great-grandfather's book make a note in the footnotes at the end, and it says, dwarfs or little people still populate the Eskimo territory, and occasionally their footprints are seen along the riverbank. So even the anthropologists who are taking these stories are taking it seriously as though these people are real and really live out there in the wilderness.
Because so many people are telling them, like, this is my culture, this is my story. So what James is saying is that if Teddy really encountered Inukins, it would really, truly, 100% validate all these stories, especially James's great-grandfather's story.
Yes.
So, like, the connection just keeps getting deeper for James. So Teddy is in a maximum security prison for attempted murder.
I reached out to his lawyer, asked if I could talk to him. She said no. So I wrote him a letter in jail and never heard anything back. He just kind of ghosted me.
James also writes a letter to Teddy in prison and never hears anything back.
James is so connected to Teddy. He says he has more in common with him than he doesn't. And he's like, well, what made Teddy snap? He was just on the red carpet at Sundance.
Yes.
Everything was going great. He was a pillar of our community. He was doing great things. He was never violent. He was never someone who'd like be on the run.
Yeah.
So what changed? Because it's a major shift.
Yes.
So we go to Big Bob and...
Well, we learned, like, in this part of Alaska, Facebook is not, like, a fun social media tool. It's the way people communicate.
Is it ever?
So James gets on Facebook to sort of track down other people who knew Teddy. And this is where we meet Big Bob, who I'm obsessed with. And James wants us to know right from the jump,
if you're on his side and he's cool to you, you'd be all right. But if you're on his bad side, I wouldn't want to be on his bad side.
You do not get on the wrong side of fucking Big Bob. You do not do it.
Bob and James are old friends. Bob knows Teddy. It's better to be on Bob's good side.
Yeah.
Because being on his bad side is, like, really bad.
I gotta tell you, we meet Bob throughout. He seems kind of like a pussycat. I'm not afraid of Big Bob.
I would love a hang with Bob and James. They would not have me.
Yeah.
But I would meet them wherever they wanted.
They wouldn't have you. Of course they would.
I don't know if they'd be like, oh, because I'd ask a lot of questions. Like, I think that I might annoy them, but I think they're super cool. I'd let them call the shots. I would just sit there and sort of absorb their coolness if they'd have me.
I would kind of like to watch the documentary of you and James and Big Bob just driving around the Alaskan outback.
We'd like find a joint with a cool jukebox and we'd like have, I don't know, have a good time, I think. But
I think you're selling yourself short. That pink hair, you're a lot of fun.
Maybe.
People would be into hanging out with you.
I got,
we got a couple hundred thousand listening right now that would like their turn, in fact.
I got a really funny joke that Mike and I have. One of my favorite bars in LA is Rainbow.
Sounds gay. I'm in.
I know. That's a keychain that we have too. But it's not. It's like a super, it's like the Hollywood Vampires where they started, Mickey Dolenz. And like, it's a huge, Ozzy Osbourne. It's a huge, huge, huge rock and roll bar. It's right on the strip. It's right near Whiskey Go-Go. It's like, it's one of my favorite bars. I fucking love it.
Uh-huh.
But it depends on when you go. It could be kind of like, oh, I don't fit in here. Like, I'm definitely not cool enough. I'm not like rock and roll enough. But Mike and I will always go. It'll always be at the very least our first drink. Maybe our first and last drink, but we'll always stop at Rainbow.
It's called, and where is it?
It's right on the strip.
Okay.
In West Hollywood.
I'm going next time.
I love it.
There's so many gay bars in West Hollywood, though. It's hard to get to the straight places.
It's great.
If you
it's,
ask
it's
me.
It's like history. And look it up if you don't know anything about it. But anyway. So, but we walked in one day and the guy who like checked our IDs, he just went, hey, cool hair. And I was like, thanks. But he was like an old, like, this guy's been around the fucking block.
Yeah.
He's partied with everyone. And it was just, hey, cool hair.
Cool
hair.
Like,
I was like, thanks, man.
Yeah, you kind of can't get a better job than the doorman at a cool old school West
Rainbow,
Hollywood bar. Like,
you know,
come
like
on.
Just like legendary.
My
anyway,
God.
Anyway, they tell us about Kayana. And so this is an Inupiaq village outside this like main community that we're talking about. The population is 350 people.
It's ridiculous. Like, that's the population of this booth.
Everyone knows everything about everyone. They say it's like living in a fishbowl. That's like, come on, 350 people, my God.
Can I just tell you, when James shows up at Big Bob's house, they greet each other in the boyest way possible. They don't hug.
Hey. What's up, fucker?
They fist bump and go, what's up, fucker?
What's up, fucker? Here's the thing about Bob, though, which I love.
What's up,
he's
fucker?
He's who you get in touch with when you need to get in touch with other people. And I'm like, all right, Bob, dazzle me. If you're the guy, because everyone has a guy, Bob's the guy, like, let's go. And so then suddenly they're just like, again, I love this. They're just picking up where they left off. They're like,
I heard Mario Joe is cooking again. I fucking met him and he was karate chopping rocks in half. working at Little Louie's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so.
Pizza House, Mario Joe? That, oh, that from back in the day? He's back in Cots, huh?
Back in Cots.
Well.
I'm in. Pizza House Mario Joe.
You would fit right in. Come on.
I love
they
this.
Would love you.
I love this.
Travel down the road and back again. Fam, level up your slot games this season with thousands of unique slots on DraftKings Casino.
Play the classics, check out fan favorites, and go for glory with jackpots. More than 80 millionaires have already been crowned.
Everyone gets a free chance at 5,000 in casino credits every day with new daily rewards rocket.
Just log in, launch your rocket, and claim free rewards daily.
Make your play on DraftKings Casino.
In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org.
Please play responsibly. 21 plus, physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only.
Void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. No purchase necessary. 3 launches per day for rewards.
Launches expire each day at 11:59 p.m. ET.
Non-withdrawable rewards and amounts vary per launch and are subject to game and expiration limits.
Terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos.
Sponsored by DK Crown Holdings, Inc.
We're good at that. Girl, Function is back. Look, I chose Function because it's the only health platform that gives me data most people never get, and this is my favorite part, and the insights to start doing something about it, girl.
Can we have a conversation about the liver?
Yeah, please.
You know,
please.
So, like, you know, the
oh, God, today's the day, huh?
Right? All here right. it is. It's
okay.
happening.
Because here we go.
That's, but you're absolutely right, because most people only think about the liver when there's a problem.
Yes.
But the liver is central to metabolism and detoxification and nutrient balance, and its workload can really show up in your labs. And look, the holidays are coming up. Everyone's eating and drinking whatever they want, which is great.
Yeah.
But you got to check on that liver.
And so, look, with Function, you can look at and test over 100 plus biomarkers, including the ones that affect the liver. And if anything is out of whack, it will tell you what you can be doing to fix it.
Yeah.
That's the whole point here. You're getting so much more information than when you go to get your physical and you get the annual blood work. This is like you're seeing everything. They say it's a near 360-degree view to better see what's happening in your body.
Yeah, and most checkups aren't giving you this full picture.
No.
Right? And so, like, the holidays may come and go, but your liver never
yes.
stops working for you.
No. I love Function. I got on it a couple months ago. I check it all the time. I feel like I'm in pretty good shape, and if I'm not, I know they're going to tell me what to do. So fam, learn more and join using our link.
Function is in near 360 view to see what's happening in your body. And our first 1,000 listeners get a $100 credit toward their membership.
Visit www.functionhealth.com/TCO or use gift code TCO100 at sign up to own your health.
That's right. You got to own it.
Do it. Get on that dashboard. It's pretty great.
Got to own it. Bob also makes his own whiskey. He
yes.
makes jugs, which is a fifth of whiskey. He doesn't sell them. He drinks his own because we learned that in Kiana, you can only have 6 jugs at a time and it's super hard to get booze there. So they're making their own. But here's what we learn. After Teddy did that movie, that big movie on the ice that was about to change everything.
Yeah.
He started partying super hard. And according to Bob and like his intel, he kind of started big timing everyone. He was like
yeah.
walking around with a puffed up chest. Bob's like, he was all high and mighty and shit, acting like he's fucking too good for people. And he was doing great things for the community, but it kind of got to his head.
The native word for it is anga. You know, you boast, you show off. You think you're too good, like you anga. That's what it's called. Fucking anga.
I just want to say, in defense of Teddy, his whole life was giving back to the community, but also trying to get out of the community.
Yeah.
Can the guy have 5 minutes to figure it out? When you get instant success like that, sometimes sometimes you got those giraffe legs, you know,
I'm
like
sure,
the baby
yeah.
giraffe. You just got to like be a dick for
like
a minute
a
and then you figure
fawn.
It out.
And yeah. I think Bob was like, yeah, but that time ran out. He
yeah.
felt like it
yeah.
was too much too soon. And he was kind of being a dick and everyone
uh-huh.
was like happy for him. And then everyone would try to be nice to him and he'd kind of be a dick. Like, and that I think is like, not just that he was showing off in big timing, but maybe that was a part of this major shift that James like cannot wrap his head around.
Can we also talk about how the giraffe moms just drop the babies out of their bodies and they fall like 7 feet to the ground?
I think elephants do that too.
It's not, I mean, look,
small
I didn't
babies.
Make the rules, but like we can't kneel. We can't bend down.
That
you
makes me
I mean?
Want to say like Linda Belcher, like, oh, little babies.
I know.
Oh, babies.
Those poor, that's a rude awakening to life.
And they're all wet and stuff.
I
oh,
know.
Man.
They're covered in like
fawns.
The birth stuff.
Aww.
They're so cute. And they figure it out pretty fast, but like that's not an easy way to be born.
Yeah, no, it takes human babies. When do babies start walking? Like at what age or
like
month?
Like 2, I think. But maybe not. I don't remember. That's the thing. They always tell you that, like, you think you're never going to forget every milestone, and you forget them as soon as they happen.
Right.
So what? I have no idea. Okay. 7, 9 or something?
Like 28?
Daisy just started walking last week. We're so proud of her.
Is she talking yet?
Not yet.
Okay. I literally don't know. Do they talk first? Do they walk first? I think they're doing, like, that, like, mama
you.
First. I don't know.
I think they do the mama dad
thing. At the
thing.
Same time?
I don't know. You think I have a
anyway,
kid.
The point is animals have to know right away. Animals don't get 6 years of practice crawling on the carpet.
My point is just justice for Teddy. Like, I'm sure he would have come back around, but this is where we start to learn the story of what happened with Teddy.
So Bob sends us to Annie Reed.
Yes.
And she went over to Dolly Smith's place. Now, Dolly Smith is Teddy's mom.
Yes.
And Annie says, she goes over to the house, she walks in, Teddy's there. She says he was smiling like a normal person, which is a quote.
I said the smiling is creepy, but maybe not.
But I think she's trying to say, like, I walked in and everything was fine.
Yes.
Like, everything was fine. It was very clear because James is like, he was smiling. And she goes, yes, Teddy was smiling at me. It was fine.
And just as a reminder, Annie has come into Dolly's house. Dolly is the mother of Teddy. Teddy's the one standing in the living room smiling.
And so Dolly Smith, Teddy's mother, is in her bedroom.
I went into Dolly's room. She was on the floor. So I start feeling for pops. And I found a fade one, and I kind of panicked because I noticed there was a cord around her neck.
Annie remembers there being a cord around the neck. The police did not find that.
Right. So now multiple people from the health clinic come, and they're trying to give her CPR, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And when they all left Dolly's room, Teddy bailed. He's in the wind, and nobody knows where he is. So there's this, like, chaos happening. They're trying to save his mother's life. And Teddy, 1 second, was fine and smiling at Annie, and now he's gone.
Yeah, so they call the VPSO, which is a village public safety officer. Now, importantly, there are no troopers in this village.
There are no cops. Like, there's nothing. It's just this village public safety officer.
Yeah.
And James says at the time, they weren't even allowed to carry guns. They had a can of pepper spray and an audio recorder, and that's it.
I was like, audio recorder? Like, what was the crime that made them be like, you know what we need forever more is audio recorders?
We need a record of this.
Yeah.
And James is like, let me jump in. This is a good time to tell you. Alaska is the most heavily armed state in the whole union. Everybody has guns up here.
And, like, to some degree, that makes sense to me as a not gun person. Like, there's bears and hunting, and I kind of understand.
Sure.
You know?
Of course.
But we hear the audio of Annie talking to the safety officer, and she says, now, Teddy, since Annie found Dolly dead in the bedroom, Teddy's gone. Suddenly, he reappears, and this VPSO officer is trying to talk to him to calm him down, but Teddy is getting more and more agitated. Annie comes out. She's trying to talk to him. All of a sudden, Teddy is firing a gun at them.
We hear Annie give her statement to the cops. She says that Teddy told Annie that Dolly Smith, his mother, is dead, and Annie says other people heard him say that, too. So it's like, why is he announcing now that she's dead? How did he know that? But he was just smiling.
But I want to be clear that, like, there's no indication that he did it. He was there and he was acting kind of strange. But, like, she is dead. And we're eventually going to find out that there is no reason to believe that she was murdered. So, like, the important thing to understand here, what this thing here leads to the thing that Teddy does that gets him arrested. But it's all a haze of confusion.
Yeah.
There's a dead body who is the mother of this guy who is all of a sudden taking off and now shooting guns at people and acting very strangely. And it's all very confusing.
And people are, like, quote, trying to calm him down. And Annie says, and this broke my heart, because Annie goes,
Teddy, can we talk? It's me, Annie.
It's me, Annie.
Yes.
And when you say that to someone, the person you're talking to is not fully present and you're trying to bring them back.
I want to say that, like, Annie is going to tell us this later. I'm going to say this now for the sake of clarity. What Annie thinks is going on here is that Teddy is thinking, my mom is dead. I'm the only one here. People are going to think I did this. I got to get the fuck away from here because I didn't do it. And that's why he's acting so crazily.
Right. So the report says that Teddy shot at the people at his mother's house and then bailed.
Yes.
That's what's written in the documented report.
And we hear it from the body cam. Like, we hear the shot fired.
So we meet two Alaska State troopers, because the troopers aren't in the community, but when something like this happens, they get called in.
Yes.
So Sergeant Nathan Bucknall and Lieutenant Mike Roberts. And they say when they got there, it was chaos. Like, it wasn't clear where Teddy was. When they went into the house, it was, like, quiet and still.
Yes.
And so they're like, what? Like, we just heard this sort of chaotic scene. And they're like, well, when we got there, it was, like, eerily quiet.
Yeah. And making things worse, as the manhunt for Teddy is on, the people of the village are telling these troopers who do not know Teddy, he's a former Marine, he's armed, and he'll probably want to take out one of you guys.
But the village is now on lockdown. Teddy's mom, Dolly, is dead. Teddy shot at responders, allegedly. Teddy's nowhere to be found. He's talking crazy. He's armed. No one knows who's next.
And I'm just going to say it one more time. Like, in the moment, there's every reason to believe that Teddy killed his mom because he's acting so crazy. He's acting like a person who killed somebody. But eventually, we're going to learn there's no reason to believe that Teddy killed his mom. And this is all, the reason Teddy has taken off and is acting so crazily is because he's assuming that people are going to think that he did that.
Right. So on this full-on manhunt for Teddy, the troopers go to Teddy's house and they take 59 rifles and guns. And James is like, holy shit, that's a lot of guns, man.
Yeah.
They're high caliber rifles. They're not just protection in case a bear gets out of line, which first, just have a conversation first.
But it's also their house.
It's their house.
This whole planet is their
house.
But
it's also like the indigenous people's house first. So not to mention Teddy's a Marine, former Marine. He was smart. He knows how to use these weapons. He has a lot of them. And Teddy is in the wind. And Lieutenant Mike is like, we didn't have any leads. And then he goes, we didn't even try to look for him because eventually people just come back.
Because there's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go.
We are going to learn the vastness of this wilderness. But
there's nowhere to go, or like, is there?
Right.
That's the thing. Like, it is a vast wilderness. It is where people don't go because they can't really survive out there. So why would they even try?
Right. Yes.
And just like, that's an important part of the story.
Well, and to that end, Annie tells us that before Teddy took off, Teddy told his sister Lorena.
Before he ran, he told his sister Lorena. Lorena told me this, that he was talking to little people by the house. That made him go kill his mom.
Inuits.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people always say you're not supposed to talk about them.
Annie's like, James, we shouldn't even be talking about them. Like, basically, the way these Inukins work, don't start no shit, there won't be no shit. If you don't bother them, they won't bother you. But if you bother them,
yes,
they will do something. And even now, Annie's like, James, I know you want to know, but like, I'm not fully comfortable with this conversation is what I'm gathering from Annie.
Yeah.
But I do want to say that we have audio from Lorena Walker, Teddy's sister.
Yeah.
And she describes finding her mother's body. And she says there was something above her head, but there was not a cord wrapped around her head.
And when we get the police report, eventually there is no cord wrapped around her head in the official police report.
And the troopers say, even now, when they walked in, there was no signs of a fight or a struggle. It was still, like it had been still for quite some time.
And there was no damage to the body. We're going to learn all of that later, but like, I don't think he killed her.
And the dog wasn't agitated. The dog was just trying to be nice to their loved one and try to help them, but there wasn't any.
My theory on all of this is that Teddy was drinking. We'll know later that Teddy had been drinking at the time. He was in his house. He found his mother had died. He got freaked out. He was confused and disoriented, decided that people were going to think that he killed her. And then he just, like, had an episode. That's what I think happened here.
Right. So James needs to talk to Lorena, who's Teddy's sister. James is our narrator and host here. And which is, like, I don't want to call him a host because he's so much more than that.
Yeah.
But he's, like, our guy. We're following James.
He's our storyteller, just like his great-grandfather.
And James is, like, James feels bad because he doesn't want to unlock all of this for Lorena. It's been really hard for a long time. But he's, like, all I need is 5 minutes.
And he doesn't know her. So it's, like, a cold ask.
And what he does is, I loved how James did this. I really like James a lot because he approaches Lorena outside of her house. They're meeting for the first time and he's so nice and so chill and so approachable. There's a lot of talk about consent and he's like, look, he goes, I have family members in jail. I know they're not 100% bad. I know sometimes things just happen.
Yeah.
I totally understand.
Because just to be clear, what Teddy is in jail for is not the death of his mother. He's in jail for something else.
Right. And so James is trying to level with Lorena and be like, I don't think your brother's a bad guy. Like, I have people in jail too.
Yeah.
I know they're not 100% bad. He goes, I just want some questions. I want to get to the bottom of what happened.
Jerry, no, I was just trying to find people who knew him as a person. And
you know, I still had anxiety.
Oh, I understand. I completely understand. I completely understand.
I wasn't able to interview her. She just, she wouldn't talk to me.
Yeah, good talking to you too, Lorena. Have a good one, huh?
Lorena says no, and James totally respectfully gets it, and he's on his way to the next lead.
Now, in Lorena's defense, James did bring a documentary crew with him.
From afar.
You know what I mean? Yeah, they are keeping a respectful distance, but
we
I'm like—
We don't see them. I think he would have said, let me get one yes first,
yes,
and then I'll break the news about the crew. But I loved how he handled this.
No, absolutely the right way.
Travel down the road, back again.
Girl, Cornbread is back. Look, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the world, but things are a little crazy right now, and the Cornbread Hemp's CBD gummies are really helping me with this.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Short answer is I agree. I love it because these CBD gummies are formulated to work with your body, not
yes.
against it. We're all up against it too
yes.
much now. Take the CBD gummies.
So I work from home. I work from the office. I take my CBD gummy at 5 p.m. every single night because I just need a relaxation no matter what I'm doing. If I'm helping Daisy with her homework, if I'm still working, even if I'm just like watching TV, it is now my nighttime routine.
Yeah, and it's good for like, I don't know, if you're stressed out, if there's discomfort, if you just need a little relaxation, like it's just for everything.
Yeah, it's a little post-gym treat you can give yourself.
Ooh.
If you have like an extra hardwood or whatever. Oh, and also all the products are third-party lab tested and USDA organic to ensure safety and purity.
Yeah.
So fam, right now, TCO listeners can save 30% off their first order.
Just head to cornbreadhemp.com/TCO and use code TCO at checkout.
That's cornbreadhemp.com/TCO and use code TCO. My friend Robbie asked me if I actually take these the other day, and I said, yes, I do. Would you like one? And I gave him one.
Oh, great.
I know.
Now he's a fan.
Now he's a fan.
Love. So let's talk about Dolly Smith.
Dolly Smith was a pillar of the community. She made these gorgeous, expensive, they call them parkies or parkas, but they're beautiful, handmade, thick jackets made of animal hide.
Yeah, so she is described as a really, really good seamstress.
Yeah.
And these parkas are really important, and we'll get into the importance of them.
Yeah.
But at the scene, some of them were cut open, almost like they were intentionally cut up to be destroyed, and no one knows why. And James is like, Dolly would never do that. And James thinks it's a message because he says parkas are a status symbol. It's a very iconic Inuit look.
And he grew up making them with his mom. Like, James's mom also makes them, and we get some like footage of them working on them,
yeah.
and they're beautiful. But he really knows what it means to have these things. So for them to be destroyed at the crime scene means something to James.
And I just want to say, like, this is not like buying fur from some designer. This
right.
is a sacred practice. It
yeah.
is necessary in this community. They are crafted with purpose. They are made with a lot of care. It's the idea of using every bit of the animal if you're going hunting to
yes.
do everything, to respect the animal, to thank the animal. So this is not like buying a stupid fur coat from some fucking designer.
No.
So that's why I'm not going on a rant about it. This is a sacred practice in
yes.
this community. It's
Jillian
important.
Will allow it.
It's important. It's what they do. I'm not here to shit on a sacred practice that they
yes.
take incredibly seriously and done with a lot of care and respect.
100%.
So James is with his mom, Verna, and like as she's working with the fur and they're talking about the Inukin, and James is like,
people in our area have always kind of talked about some, this kind of stuff, just kind of based on, we find the little footprints, we see little running away, we stuff missing at camp.
Mm-hmm. When he talks to people older than him, they're all like, James, like, what do you want me to say? We're not really supposed to talk about it. And
yeah.
like, we always kind of knew and had these experiences, but like, this is just our life. Like, what do you want me to say?
It's interesting because everybody in this documentary, even people like law enforcement or like jury members that we'll meet eventually, everybody who's asked about the idea of the Inukins is like, yeah. Like, it's,
absolutely.
It's connected to the culture. It's connected to the spirituality. Like, nobody denies that these actual flesh and blood beings, like, live out there in the wilderness.
Right. And on top of that, Verna, James's mom, believes in the supernatural in general. But
yes.
she believes in Inukin and their powers. And she goes, there are absolutely forces of both good and evil out in the world. But it's about which one you feed more. Are
and
you going to feed the good one or the bad one?
We hear this from hunters. We hear this from people that, like, wouldn't normally, like, necessarily, like, you would think, agree with this, like, woo-woo kind of stuff. Like, everybody.
Because it's not.
No.
This is their culture.
And everybody has had some kind of experience. Some of it is human and some of it is supernatural, but everybody's like, yeah, this shit is real.
I'm there.
Yeah.
Like, I totally, who am I to, absolutely. You're
yeah.
telling me about your culture. This is what we're doing.
Absolutely.
So we hear audio of Teddy speaking with his lawyer, Angela, the one who was like, James, we're not talking.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because you can tell that, like, this is the lawyer that's going to defend him in this horrible thing that he's about to do that you haven't heard about yet. So you're not missing anything yet. But, like, he's saying to her, he ran into the woods when
he
left
his mother's house.
Wow.
Sorry, go ahead.
Same brain.
Just go ahead.
With no destination in mind, felt like he was being led, told to take his parka, doesn't know who told him this. So he's saying that when he ran from his mother's house, he was being guided. And he said he went to the mountains with no food or water. He was living on berries. He was eating frozen ice. And then he describes, like, camping out in the wilderness. He said, I had visitors that night at camp.
It sounded like 20 of them marched right by me. And they were making it real obvious. Wherever I slept, they would come there at night and talk to me, talk amongst each other.
They would be making squirrel noises and bird noises.
They made bird noises and squirrel noises. Like, he's describing a real experience with real beings who are trying to communicate with him.
Yeah. And he also says, importantly to his lawyer, the word destination comes up because she's like, where were you going? And he said, I didn't have a destination. I was being led somewhere. I was told to take this parkie. By who? I have no idea.
Yeah.
So then he has this experience where they would talk to Teddy. They would talk to themselves, making these noises. All of this stuff has been written in the books and told by the story. Storytellers who are held in very high regard. Now, a skeptic could be like, because they've been written in the books for thousands of years, that's why, like, it's just sort of seeping into your psyche. But I don't know. I'm not a skeptic in this scenario.
To any skeptic, I want to say to you, but you have to remember, this man was the one of these people who actually got out and made good and was like a Hollywood actor.
Yes, right.
So doing what he did makes no sense. We'll learn later he has no history of mental illness.
It's not like he's been off the grid his whole life.
No, and he's right, exactly. There's no reason for him to do what he did. So the idea that he was possessed by some sort of supernatural thing, I think, is a little bit more believable. And he describes this experience of like being out camping in the woods and going to get water one night. And he said, up until now, he had just heard them outside of his tent. But now he sees these beings across the river. And he said, we just stood there looking at each other for the longest time. And he says over and over again, I could hear the words they were saying, vulnerable, weak, death. And he said, I ignored them. I knew if I started a conversation, it would be like an open agreement that I was willing to go with them. This is very real to him.
And he says, if I followed them, I'd never come back.
Yes.
And it cuts to James and he's like, look, I know how this sounds. I'm a rational guy. I get it.
But I know from my grandfather's stories that in each one of those Inupiaq stories, there's a sliver of truth. I had always been raised around people who talk about these things. Competent hunters. They're sane, respectable people.
I heard these stories from sane, respectable people.
Yeah.
And I know what he's trying to say. Like, the guy you wouldn't expect to believe in this, like Ross.
So enter Ross. He's the village elder who was out hunting. And like, he tells this really long story about being out in the woods and having this experience that his like body was starting to be possessed by a supernatural force. And because he grew up in this community, he knew what was happening to him.
And this guy, he's a retired magistrate. He's a superior court master. He's a woodworker. And I think what they're trying to say is like, this is a guy who works with like facts and, you know, like logic and reason. And he is saying, he goes, I know a lot of people think Teddy's crazy, but I don't know, man. Like, I've seen things. He goes, I've had experiences. And when he talks about his body being taken over, he describes it. He goes, it started from my head.
Yeah.
And then they got control of my voice. And he goes, I don't know what I would have become if I couldn't stop it. Some people don't have the control to stop it. I don't know. I was able to.
Yeah. He says he like called out to God.
And he like was able to stop it. But he to this day, and I believe him. Like, I believe him.
I mean, look, to just talk about it for a second. I'm down with the earthly bound people living in the wilderness and wanting to not deal with the other humans and all of that. You lose me a little bit on the spirituality. My body was taken over by a demon. Like, I don't know about that.
I don't think they're demons, though. I think they, I don't know. I'm in.
I'm open to like being wrong. I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm much more in the earthly world of like, we meet people who give us actual evidence that these people actually do live out there.
Yes.
And that to me is much more compelling. I'm not saying I don't believe that. I guess I don't have a strong opinion on it one way or the other, but the actual things that we can touch and that we can see in the evidence that shows that these communities actually do live out there.
There's evidence.
I'm really into that.
There's evidence.
Yeah.
So here's another thing that people see as evidence that I think I see as evidence too.
Okay.
Because
he was on foot for 10 days, 40 miles through some of the most difficult terrain in Alaska. Even by Alaskan standards, the trek that Teddy made is fucking crazy. It's almost unbelievable that he made it that far on foot by himself. There's a lot of people think he might have had help.
James is like, it's fucking crazy. Like, it is unbelievable that he made it that far on foot by himself.
And especially in that weather and the temperature, he did not have the clothing to not become hypothermic, and somehow he didn't.
And even the cops are like, yeah, we don't know. Like, yeah. Did he have help? Like, it doesn't make any sense for him to have made that journey. It makes no sense.
And like, if you see the documentary, if you see the documentary, you'll see like the terrain that he traveled through. It is the densest, thickest, I mean, absolutely impenetrable forest. And he makes it on foot with, remember, he had no food, no water, no warm clothing.
It's uninhabited, as far as we know.
With the clothing on his back, and somehow, so people are saying, did he have help?
So
was he helped along the way?
He comes across, in his travels, he comes across a cabin. It's totally off the grid.
Yeah.
There's no cell service, no internet, just military radio, marine radio.
Yeah.
He was able, he like, goes into this cabin. So it's not his cabin. He
no.
is, I guess if we're going to get technical about it, either at the very least trespassing,
yes.
possibly breaking and entering.
We're going to learn whose cabin it is. It's a nice cabin.
Yeah.
It's like a cabin that's in the wilderness for like on purpose. And it's got like nice furniture and shit.
So he goes in, he eats the bag of potato chips because he's starving. It's been 10 days. But he says, when I reached the cabin, I was no longer bothered by these people, meaning the Inukin.
Yes.
So then they're like, all right, tell us about the shooting.
So eventually, he's just like living in this cabin and two hunters show up. Their names are Paul and Charles Buckle.
They're brothers.
They're brothers. Teddy is, they're not husbands. They're brothers.
Yeah. Paul is here with us.
Yeah. Teddy is sleeping. He hears their voices outside. And like, this I love so much because the Buckles, this is their friend's cabin. And the friends are like, you can use it anytime.
Right.
So they're there to use the cabin. They come upon Teddy.
He introduced himself as Paul and said, yeah, I'm up here working on the cabin. Nothing seemed off. Nothing seemed out of place. We carrying the rest of the gear in and we got the clothes hung up. We sat, we had coffee, hot chocolate.
They all are like, hey, man. Hey, bro.
Because
they sit down for cocoa and coffee.
Because Kiana has like 350 people. They recognized each other like right away.
Yeah.
So they were like, oh, Teddy. And the guy from the end, he was famous. So they were like, oh, hey.
I guess that I just love this idea of like not being mad that this guy broke into your friend's cabin, but more like happy to have a friend in the wilderness.
Because also they're in the middle of nowhere and the weather sucks. It's raining really hard. So they're not going to be like, you have to leave person we know from our 300 person community. Like, no, we're going to take care of each other.
Do you know what I just realized this cabin is? For me,
what?
A party barge. I would never go there. Like, going to a cabin in the wilderness is,
but
to me,
party barges.
Is what getting on a party barge is for you.
I see.
Like, me alone in a cabin in the woods with no cell service, no
I'm
internet.
Like, a cabin in the rain? Are you kidding me? I listen to rain sounds to fall asleep. I get it in the wild. I get it really?
No, 40 miles from anybody? Absolutely. This is, I now understand what you feel like when I try to pressure you to get on the party barge.
Thank you.
The absolute anxiety
Sometimes
of like.
Sometimes you have to hit your rock bottom.
Yeah,
to
you're
really
right. You're
it.
Absolutely right. Oh, God, I'm there.
You know? So, Teddy is at the very least trespassing. This is not his cabin,
yes.
right? He doesn't have permission to be there. I'm just saying. But at the same time, the brothers, like you were saying, haven't spoken to the owner of the cabin recently. They were just like, hey, if you ever come upon it, the weather sucks. Like, you can use it whenever.
The keys are under the mat.
Like,
go in anytime.
Help yourself to the salt and vin.
Exactly. We got a bag of chips on the table. It's not going to eat itself.
Right. But everything's fine. They're chilling. They're having hot chocolate. And Paul's like, I cannot stress enough. Nothing was weird. Like, there were weapons, but like the brothers had the hunting rifles. There was also a pistol in the kitchen. But James is like, this is very normal. It's for protection or hunting or whatever. Like, nothing is out of place here.
So Paul gets up to go look for his satellite phone because he's got to call people and like let them know that they got there or whatever. It's not where he thought he left it. Everyone is looking for it and something happens and Teddy flips.
And also, I do want to say, they're asked, no smell of alcohol.
Yeah.
No one is seeming hammered. They're drinking hot chocolate and having a grand old time in the rain. Like, really,
yes.
It's normal and wholesome.
So Teddy says,
these voices started coming back. And I thought that they were part of the voices and everything that was following me. And I thought that I was being deceived into doing something or going to be led into something. That's when I shot.
Suddenly, these voices are back.
They've come back.
He feels like now he's fighting the voices that are telling him to do something.
And he's feeling tricked. And he goes, and that's when I shot them. I think maybe what he's trying to say, I could be totally wrong, but I think it's almost like the voices are saying, you can't trust these people.
Yes.
They are tricking you.
Now, this to me is where it sounds much more like a mental health episode.
A little bit, yes.
You know,
it feels, because one of the brothers, Charles Chuck, is shot in the chest.
By Teddy.
And the bullet goes completely through him and out the window. And now the brothers are both panicking.
Yeah. And Paul, the brother, the one who hasn't been shot, is begging for the satellite phone so they can call for help. He says Teddy is screaming. All of a sudden, Teddy wants all their shit. He wants their boat. He wants their supplies. He tells Paul to go get the boat. Paul gets the boat and then comes back and Teddy shoots him.
But once again, the bullet goes right through Paul's shoulder and goes completely through him, just like it did for his brother. Now, as these two men are...
They're hiding in the woods.
Yeah, they have found each other somehow. Teddy has left them for dead. There's another way to say it, because he starts packing up all of their gear into the boat.
Their food, their guns, their satellite phone, everything. He's taking everything.
And there's no way, these men, are. There's no way to get in touch with anyone. They're in the middle of nowhere. They happen to find each other.
Yeah.
And then Paul happens to find this marine band, he calls it, this like radio.
Yeah.
And turns it to channel 68 and is incredibly lucky that someone picks up, connects to troopers, and these two men are saved.
Yeah.
When it's 20 hours after being shot, when I tell you the fact that they're alive is a miracle, I cannot say that enough.
And Paul tells us most people shot in the chest the way that Chuck, his brother, was, wouldn't survive for more than a couple hours. And then he says of his own injuries.
When they figured out what had actually happened to me, the femoral artery and the brachial artery in your arm, if you cut it, nick it, most people would bleed out within 5 to 10 minutes.
Most people would bleed out in 10 minutes. They didn't get to a hospital for 20 hours. He says, why I didn't die that night, nobody knows. And then he says, neither one of us should have survived. There are a lot of things going on out there that none of us can explain.
Nobody can make sense of it. The troopers, the doctors, the doctors are like, how? Yeah. Wait, 20 hour? What, in the rain, in that terrain?
Yeah.
It took you, like, the panic of it? Like, what? It makes no sense. So the troopers are now in the choppers, trying to spot Teddy.
Teddy's on the river. The troopers are in the air. They find him. They tell the troopers on the ground where they are, and these other troopers set up an ambush. Now, the two doing the ambush are the ones that have been with us the whole time. And they say, like, one had his sight set on the raft to take the raft out, and the other one had a license to kill Teddy if he did not comply with their orders.
Now, this ambush is hours. They're standing in the woods waiting to pounce on Teddy for hours. And the troopers say once they finally make contact with Teddy, Teddy is like in shock. Like,
because the troopers are in the woods and they're using some kind of bullhorn. And so Teddy can't see them and he doesn't know where the voices are coming from.
And so he thinks that maybe God is talking to him or the Inukin, or at one point he looks up to the sky and they're saying it's so clear that he's like scanning the tree line, desperately trying to see who or what is speaking to him.
Yes.
And
what a mindfuck. Like, if you've been hearing voices and all of a sudden there are real voices that you think you're hearing.
That is like heartbreaking to me.
That
he's on this boat, probably not remembering what he just did, whether it was a supernatural thing or an episode of some kind.
Or a lie.
Or a lie. Like, he's just out there on
We have to acknowledge that it could be a lie.
I guess.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense why he would, but just to say that, like, could be lying.
Why he would place himself as a sitting duck instead of running through the woods, why he's now in the river where they could easily see him. Like, he's not here.
No, I mean, if anything, to me, if it's not the actual supernatural thing that, like, people are saying it could be, it has to be some kind of mental health episode.
Sure, yeah, of course. Like, without saying that without diagnosing it, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not someone who's here with us. But the idea of trying to, like, really, like, grasp who's speaking to him through the trees, like, is heartbreaking to me.
Yes.
So Teddy Kyle Smith is arrested without incident.
Yes.
And he just keeps repeating, Inukin.
Because James is saying what makes Teddy's case unique is that under oath, he begins talking about the Inukins. They want to talk to him about why he shot these people, and he's trying to talk to them about his experience with the Inukins.
Now, this is when it gets complicated, because was Teddy really being tried of a jury of his peers?
Right.
Or is it a bunch of white people who don't know anything about the folklore and his culture and the regard of the story?
And James tells us
the ACLU and the Native American Rights Fund got involved, and they were saying that villagers from Kiana would be more receptive to the fact that maybe he, as a flawed and complicated man as he is, maybe he did have an encounter out there that he really wanted us, the people, to know about.
they're trying to convince the judge that maybe people from Kiana, which is where Teddy is from, would be a better option of jurors because they would at least understand the legend, the lore of the Inukin. Whereas the only juror we meet is this white guy who's like, I'm sure, I guess it's possible, but we didn't even take that into consideration in our deliberations.
Right. This guy, Robin, he totally discounted anything. He goes, there's no place for that.
In fairness, I don't know if he, because he does say he believes that there's a world in which the Inukin exist, but that wasn't what they considered in this trial. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
Yeah.
But he, to me, is another person who's like, yeah, it's possible.
Because the facts remain, he shot two people.
Yes.
He left them for dead. He broke into a cabin. He was on the run. That's what these people, on paper,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Because the judge asks Teddy, what would have happened if you didn't listen to these influences? And Teddy says, you know, I've asked myself a lot over these last few years, and I went, years.
Like,
I looked up, it took 2 years for him to get to trial, but when he says, maybe I should have just went down the path they wanted me to go years ago, I'm like, this has been brewing in him for quite some time.
Yeah.
And the jury is like, this is all an act. He's guilty of attempted murder in the first degree. He gets a 99-year sentence with no probation. There's no death penalty in Alaska. But the jury is like, this guy's just trying to act crazy. Like, they don't believe a word of it.
I would like to be clear that that is not what I think. I know I threw that out as an option because we have to consider it because it is an option. I don't think that's what happened. For me, I think that it's a real experience that he really had or a mental health break.
Yeah, because James is like, look, I think the Inukin exist, and let's talk about the facts of why I think that, says James,
I mean, also me. In fairness, he says they definitely existed and they may still do.
Right.
I don't know that he's saying that they definitely exist today, but he's saying that at least at one time they definitely did and maybe they still do.
Yeah, they don't really get into this, but I just want to say, because James says that
recently there was a proposed mining road north of the Kobuk River to get all this minerals back to Anchorage. And so a group of archaeologists, geologists have to go and scout the area and make sure that it's not going to affect the ecosystem.
Look into the Ambler Road project. It's a 211-mile stretch of land. It's in danger of being destroyed, drilled
land. Yeah, of course.
You know, and it would destroy the land, the resources, the people, the animals. President Biden put a stop to it in 2024. Things have since been reversed. It is a mess. Look into it. Maybe we can stop this. Who knows? But that is what they're talking about. This environmental impact study was happening on this enormous piece of land that is uninhabited by humans for the most part.
Well, and as part of this, they sent in geologists and archaeologists to make sure that the ecosystem wouldn't get messed up. And along with the geologists and the ecologists, they sent some tribal liaisons. Those are the people who are there to say, like, hey, you may not understand how this will affect the ecosystem, so let me actually tell you.
And on top of that, this is where most, if not all, of the Inukin stories come from.
Yes.
So this is a very important piece of land for the culture in general, not just the resources and the humans and the animals.
But it's also, like, incredibly densely populated, and it is entirely possible that an entire, like, culture of people could live out there undetected.
Right.
That's the point.
So when the study is published, they said, we found things we cannot explain.
Yes.
They looked like they were sacred sites. And they look like, quote, little people homes.
Yes.
Now, Mary Black is one of the tribal liaisons to the scientists who did this study. And James is like, oh, I know her.
And he gets her for the interview. And she is here. She's my favorite person in this whole documentary.
This is one of the best exchanges we've ever seen.
Ever.
Because James, she knows why
Nonsense,
she's here.
Son of a bitch.
I know. Fuck. But we're gonna keep Mary Black. Mary Black is going to stay on the good side of history here.
Yeah.
Because James has been dying for this. Mary knows exactly why she's here. This is totally unscripted.
What were they? Tell me what you saw. Just point blank, what did you see?
Fucking homes. Like somebody's house. Like not people houses, not
Inukin homes.
Yep.
Fucking homes. Like someone's house, like Inukin homes.
She says not like people's homes, but, and then he says Inukin homes, and she says yes, and she describes them. Like they're small structures that small people would live in. They look like homes that were built by people. And Mary is the one who shuts down the project. She says, I told them they needed to stop work immediately. This is not our land. This is their land. And then she goes, and they were like, but can we just? And she goes, no, this is some real shit.
This is some real shit. And they fly over the land. land and you can see the homes and you're like, there they are.
Yes.
And now James and Mary, this is why you need people from the community and from the culture to be in this conversation, because they're
saying— And in fairness, they were.
Right. And because they're saying these houses are made out of rocks, like big boulders.
Yes.
And James is like, that's not what Inupiaq people made their homes out of.
Right.
They used sod or tents in the summertime. So
the
point
being, this is not from our ancestors. This is another different culture of people.
That you saw, and Mary's like, we're putting an end to all. Like, we need, no.
Now, to me, this is the best evidence we have that the Inukin are real.
They are absolutely real, or were.
Like, they seem to be uninhabited at this point, or at least that part of it.
Right.
But, like, that they either did exist or did and still do.
And if you're looking for a supernatural part of the story, after they found this land,
there was 5 helicopters. They flew in 2 mechanics. They looked through all, everything. There was nothing wrong with them helicopters. Nothing. Nothing wrong with them.
But they wouldn't fly.
They wouldn't fly. They wouldn't even turn.
The helicopters stopped working. Nothing was wrong with them. They were fully charged.
Yeah,
they had
brought
the gas
in 5
or whatever.
Mechanics.
Nothing was wrong with them. They just wouldn't turn on.
Yes.
Right after this area was discovered. I don't know what that means.
I know. I'm with you. I'm with you.
I would, again, look into the Ambler Road Project. If we could stop it, that would be real fucking great.
Yes.
That's my homework for today. Please help stop this whole Ambler Road situation.
So Jeff tells us about how he feels like he's trying to tell this story the right way, and that he feels like because he's trying to do it, for example, not badgering the sister, the story is starting to come to him.
Because out of nowhere, Lorena, Teddy's sister, calls James.
Yes.
And she's ready to talk.
Yes.
And when that
And only to him.
Of course. Because why, like, he's the only person.
Yes.
Right? And I guess word got around, or she called Bob, or someone was like, this is who you can trust.
Yeah.
But, like, in these moments, even in real life, when someone is finally ready to sit down and talk to you, you know, like, it's a major moment.
Major moment. Yes.
And James takes such care of this.
Yeah. So, it's very Robin Roberts, in my opinion.
It really it you know? Is, you yeah. know? And so yeah. Lorena talks about their mom, Dolly, and she says on the record a million times, she does not think her brother Teddy did anything to Dolly,
and
their mother.
The evidence backs it up just for the millionth time.
And this is when she said what you said earlier for the context, because it would have been very confusing if you didn't, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
That she's like, well, no, her theory is that he would never do anything to hurt her, but it was going to look like he did.
And he was a drinker, and he was probably drinking and confused and didn't know what to do and acted out.
Because the medical report kind of backs up what Lorena's saying. There were no real injuries, no strangulation, no signs of a struggle. The cause of death is undetermined. Not murder, not natural causes, just undetermined.
No one's been charged with her death.
And Lorena 100% believes that her brother saw Inukins.
Yeah, and once again, she says, I believe this because he's never heard voices or had experiences like this at any other point in his life. We spent all of our time together. This has never happened. Why else would he do all of this crazy stuff if what he's telling us isn't true?
And Lorena says, however, I do think he was also drinking a lot at the time.
Yes.
So now we get James and Bob, and they're together, and they're trying to make sense of all of these different pieces. And Bob is like, look, I got to tell you, after a bender, and he said this at this time, at the time of this filming, he's over 4 years and 8 months sober, to which I said, fuck yeah, Bob.
Yes.
But he's like,
if he was on an alcohol bender for a week, and he kind of was stopping the DTs, the snakes. People see shit when they snake out.
I 100% will vouch for that because I've fucking partied for weeks. I fucking hallucinated. I seen snakes, you know, fucking snaking out.
What they're saying is, like, going on a bender for drinking this, like, homemade whiskey for weeks and weeks, Bob's like, you see some shit. You hallucinate.
I mean, so then maybe that's what this is. I don't want to take away the magic of the Inukin, but, like, maybe that's what this is.
Because James, to your point, explains that, like, in this community, in this small village, it's kind of a different kind of drinking because, like, something that's $10 in the city is, like, $200 here.
And I think that we know that there's a cap on the amount of liquor you're allowed to have in your house because I think we know that this town has a reputation of a lot of drinking and violence. And so a lot of the liquor is bootleg. It's just very hard to get alcohol. So when you drink it, you consume it quickly.
And James says they call it time traveling.
Yes. Because
you'll start drinking in one place, black out, end up somewhere else and not know how you got there. And James, I was on the edge of my seat. Just the way he said this is so moving. James, you're such a good storyteller.
You really are.
Because he says he used to be a really big drinker. And he said, I was erasing myself. I was losing who I was. And he goes, so I had my last drink. I had my last cigarette. And I wrote another letter to Teddy.
But that means that happened during the course of making this documentary.
Yeah.
Like that, like when we started with James, he was still living that way. And in the course of, like this documentary saved him in a way. Telling Teddy's story saved him.
Because James lays it all out on the table in this letter. Who he is, where he's from, how much he relates to Teddy, how much he sees Teddy, which is all anyone wants, really, right? Is to be seen.
And he says,
mainly interested in the Inyokun part of the story. Would you be willing to talk with me on the phone? I've included a copy of my great-grandfather's book. I hope you enjoy the stories and take care. P.S. I put money on your books.
Because I am of you. I am of your people. And here's the book that my grandfather essentially wrote about his experience with the Inyokun.
Yeah.
So he sends this off to Teddy. And, like, we don't know how much longer later, but his phone rings and it's Teddy calling
him. And
he
goes, and also I put some money on your account.
Oh, that was also very smart.
Smart.
I made note of that, too.
And I don't, I'm not saying it was all because of that, but it's just
it
like.
It can't hurt.
James is like, dude, I'm giving you everything I can possibly give here. I'm using, all my cards are on the table.
Yes.
I'm not bullshitting anything here. Even here's a little bit for your time because it must suck in there.
Yes.
You know, like, he's a good dude.
Yep.
So you have an automated call from your uncle. And he thought it was his actual uncle who could,
who could
be calling him from the inside.
Yeah.
It's Teddy.
Yes.
And so Teddy wants to speak in person and James is panicked.
Yeah.
Because he goes, I was nervous. I wasn't scared. But like James is literally blowing on his palms because we're right back to 8 Mile. That's how sweaty his palms are.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, this must have been how you felt when you interviewed Lin-Manuel Miranda when he came to your
But I'm
not making a joke. Like, I'm saying that, like, to Teddy, it's the same thing. It's like, this is the story he's wanted to get. He feels close to this guy.
Huge. It's
and
a huge
like,
moment.
I relate to this moment too. I've done big interviews where I can't sleep the night before. Like, I totally understand.
I lived in a fourth floor walk up and it was so echoey and I heard the footsteps coming up the stairs.
And
it's wild.
It feels like a march towards death. I know.
It's wild. And I was like, I can't open the door.
I know. I know that feeling.
I can't do this.
With the same exact person, in fact.
Yeah. It's wild. So for, of course, different reasons, more important reasons here, but like, you know, they're coming together. They're bonding over what they have in common, which is so much. And they don't have a lot of time.
Yes.
James looks off camera and he's very aware of the ticking clock.
Yeah.
Which sucks because it's so important. And after all this time and like the changes that James made to his life, what he's learned about himself and his culture, it's like now there's like TikTok, we gotta go. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
So James asks Teddy about Dolly, about the night his mother died.
Yeah. And so he says,
You're not getting an answer from that. Some things in life happen that can't be explained. I didn't do it. I didn't. You know, my family knows that, you know, and I know that.
My family knows that I didn't do it, and I know that I didn't do it. But, like, I think that, like, died of natural causes. Like, her death was declared undetermined.
And he's never been charged for it.
And he's never been charged.
He's not in prison for that.
Yeah.
But now we talk about Paul and Charles Buckle, who he shot and left for dead. It's a miracle these two men are alive.
An absolute miracle.
And and I don't say that lightly.
No,
like, really.
I'm with you. Yes.
And so Teddy says he is sorry for what he did for shooting those men. He said, if I am not sorry, then I'm not growing and I'm not learning.
Yes.
And he says, every opportunity I ever get to help them out, I will in whatever way I can. But then where he starts talking about Inyokuns.
Yes.
And he's explaining, because James is like, what happened? Like, what do you remember about shooting them? Like, what did it feel like? Was it you?
Yeah.
Or was it this experience?
Yeah. And he starts to recount the story that we've heard, you know, that he was encountering everything he'd ever been warned about as a kid. To be honest with you, I was losing the thread of this conversation. It was very hard for me to follow exactly what Teddy was trying to say.
Because he says, he goes, it's almost as if time stopped. And he goes, and I mean completely.
Yeah.
Almost like really like, I understand what he said. I can visualize it, but I can't use the word. So I apologize for that. But time stopped. And he said everything he's learned from childhood, everything he's been told to not even speak about becomes clear into his sight of view.
But like what he ultimately lands on is that they weren't trying to get him to go with them. They were trying to teach him to go back to the old ways.
They have seen our culture disappearing. The language, the drumming, the singing. You're giving up all this because of Western society. And they see that with their own eyes.
He's saying they were describing him at that stage in his life. He was drinking too much. He was big timing everyone.
Uh-huh.
He had this great opportunity to do this great stuff for the community, and he was throwing it away. And so what he's saying is that he was on the wrong path. He was so close to death. And they are saying, like, go back to the old way of life. This culture is disappearing. We don't want you to be part of that new society. Almost, maybe, perhaps, like, come be with us.
I don't know, girl. I mean, I believe everything that he's saying about, like, returning to culture, preserving the culture, obviously, I 100 million percent believe in it.
Because it's what James is saying. So it's a parallel thing of, like, stick to the Inuit community.
Yes, and but I also think this is a man who did something awful after a long bender of drinking and has had a long time to think about why. And,
yeah.
And I'm not saying he's lying. I think that he probably believes that story to be true. But to me, it sounds like a guy that had a mental health crisis after a long time of drinking homemade whiskey.
Yeah, because what James says, the filmmaker, in conclusion, basically, is that, like, he believes that Teddy saw the Inukin, but he thinks Teddy misunderstood the message.
Uh-huh.
That they weren't trying to hurt him, they were trying to save him. And
yeah.
So James is saying that, like, it's a cautionary tale because Teddy is complicated and flawed. And if you live a life of self-destruction, you don't go very far. But if you go the other way, like, the paths open up. And so James sort of takes that as, like, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah. And I want to be really clear that I'm not saying it can't happen and it doesn't happen. I don't necessarily think it happened here, but it doesn't matter because, yes, those two men were shot, and that is horrible, and that should never have happened. But look at how much has been learned. Look at the conversation that has been had by the tale this man has told about seeing the Inukin. And, you know, Hulu now putting out a documentary about remembering the culture, learning about the culture. You picking this documentary for us to cover and bringing it to our listeners. Like, there's so much good came from this.
Because he says, like, James has to keep doing what he's doing. Because he says, if you don't, they'll go away. Like,
yes.
They will die.
Yes.
And so someone's got to give a shit about the stories. So it's like, hi, James. We give a shit
it.
All the time.
Yes.
We give a shit. So he's like, you know what? At the end of the day,
we're going to hold on to our traditions, our culture, our language, our dances, our stories, in order to give future generations a sense of identity and not be told who you are.
To give future generations a sense of identity and not be told who you are, like that stupid cough drop commercial.
Right, exactly.
Where Teddy said early on, which I think was so important to hear, like, sometimes you kind of believe, like, am I a cartoon?
Uh-huh.
Am I a caricature?
Of course.
And that messes with you
yes.
a lot. So, Jane, like, it's all about sort of taking the power back and being like, no, this is the story. And the Inukin stories could be real, but it also could be a mental health crisis that also needs to be addressed. As well,
yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah, yes. And at the end of the day, a lot of good came from this.
I agree. I want to, like, look up James and see what else he's doing and what other stories he's telling. Like, I just want to talk to him more. And Bob, if you'll have me.
Oh my God, girl, we did. What's it called?
This is called Blood and Myth. It's on Hulu. It is excellent. It's like an hour and 15 minutes. It's
so
really good.
So good. Hey, slide into GP's DMs today and thank her for working so hard on the calendar.
No,
listen to me. This is you are an unsung hero in this position.
Oh,
I really don't even know how hard it is, but I respect it and I'm grateful for it. Fam,
thank you.
Join the Facebook group, please. Join us on the Patreon.
Yeah, we got a lot. You can listen to this very thing ad-free.
You can. And then, like, Mr. and Mrs. Murder, The Disappearance of Amy Bradley, The Tylenol Murders.
And sometimes we get interviews, like
yes.
Dr. Anne Burgess and Rue Powell from Undercover Underage. So, I don't know,
so
James.
So many.
If you want to talk, like, that's where we do that. Like, our interviews are on Patreon, so.
And YouTube.
And YouTube.
YouTube for free.
So, you know.
Yeah, join us over there. What are we doing next, girl?
Oh, God.
Oh.
Train wreck, Mayor of Mayhem, about that
yes.
crazy Canadian mayor, Rob Ford.
Absolutely bananas.
This guy doesn't know how to keep his mouth
I know.
Shut.
I
if there's
know.
A foot, it's in this guy's mouth.
I know. All right, well, stay tuned for the trailer for that, fam. And we love you. And that's it.
This is what we like to call balance from blood and myth
exactly.
to this fucking literal train wreck.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
All right, bye.
Bye, we love you.
Enough is enough, and I want respect.
From the moment Rob Ford was elected, we all recognized that this was not going to be a boring 4 years.
The public loved him.
He was like a rock star.
His success made no sense by any normal political standards.
This is backdooring a quick motion. Staff doesn't support it. You're upset.
He turned City Hall into a circus.
He does not have a shred of credibility.
He was always delivering this image of the everyman. But what he told everybody was a lie.
all of a sudden, we realized control of Canada's biggest city was in the hands of a man who had no personal control over his life.
Get off my property!
Leave me.
If you are an alcoholic, which, you know...
Fairport, do you have a drug problem?
I said, Rob, they say they have a video of you smoking crack cocaine. And he told me, don't worry, buddy, there's no video.
Trust me, I've seen it. He is smoking drugs in this video.
It's just lies after lies and lies.
Whoa, I can't believe I'm here right now. Like, this is nuts.
When you attack my integrity, I see red.
There were just so many twists and turns that you couldn't predict it.